Welcome to the GamesNet Berlin Europe podcast. Here, we speak with extraordinary games industry professionals and listen to their story to learn all about what they've built and who they are. GamesNet Berlin Europe is the international games industry initiative of MediaNet Berlin Brandenburg, the networking association for the media, creative and digital industries in Germany's capital region. My name is Simon Oler, and I will be your host for this program. This is part two of the GNBE podcast with Christian Metzger. Here we speak about his personal life and personal development. There's also a part one where we speak about Christian's career and professional life in more detail. Feel free to listen to that one before or after part two. Either way is fine. You will find part one on the platform you're listening on now. Hit that subscribe or follow button if you like. In part two, we talk about how important his own agency was for Christian's life and how it resulted in him building a company that's more like a family than anything else. We also cover important games, darker times, and everything in between, as we do. I hope you enjoyed listening to part two of my conversation with Christian Metzger. Have fun. Hi, Christian. Welcome back to the GNBE podcast. Part two with you. Hello.
Hello.
Long time no see.
Yeah. Two weeks. Felt like forever.
Yes. Ages. Man, let's talk about life a little bit. We talked a lot about many different things in part one. It was a bit more about your studio and your career. You gave a good insight into the vision that you have. And I really want to know, I sense so much kind of love for the people in you and also for games and for what you do. And, you never stop talking about it, which is great. The passion is clearly there. Where are you coming from with this? How did you grow up? Who are your parents? What kind of influenced you when you were a kid, when you grew up?
I mean, for me, this is a really interesting question, because this is kind of this kind of stuff that the older you get, the more it's so funny, because you grow older and it's your youth and your upbringing is much, much more far away. But funnily, it becomes more and more clear to you how much that foundation you're building there, that foundation that your parents build, yourself you're building, how much that influences also your future. This is really interesting. And I think it's one of the reasons, I mean, I don't know if anyone else out there has the same feeling. It's like when I was young, history was just mediocre interesting for me. I was interested in stuff that also influenced me, like as an example, everything in the 20th century I was really interested in. It's like especially stuff for like the Cold War and stuff like that, because that was influencing me. There was like the sirens going off. There was the fear of, I was born 74, so I still had this fear of a third world war and stuff like that. So everything in the 20th century interested me because, yeah, that was my reality. My reality was all those things that came out of the beginning of the 21st century and that led basically into the Cold War and the situation we're in. But everything before didn't interest me that much anymore. And I think that's the funny bit about our brains, is that the older you get, the more interesting it becomes how everything is tied to each other and how something that happens in the Dark Ages, yeah, is like, in a long, long, long line, how that basically influences our today. And so history was not very interesting for me when I was in school. But now it's much more interesting. I think, and that's the same. And this is basically the same when it comes to your personal development. It's like, yes, you're a different person now. And yes, but there's some base traits you're having. They are built when you're growing up. And when I was growing up, I was always the nerd kid. So especially when I was younger, it's like, for me, reality was always a little bit boring. It's like, it had so much horrible stuff in it. So besides, I had to do what my parents say, which I always hated.
I can imagine.
I had to do in real life was always a little bit boring compared to all the cool worlds that I then started to learn about. It's like reading a lot of books, sci-fi books, Lord of the Rings, all that kind of stuff. Starting to play video games again. There I was the hero again, and there I was so special and everything. Because I always felt when I was young, it's like, because I was so young and I was so nerdy and I was overweight and all that kind of stuff. These kind of things basically influenced me. So reality became bleaker thanks to that. I mean, when you're a kid that is overweight, you don't have an easy time in school. I wasn't like hardcore bullied. I wouldn't say that. It was not like I felt like completely out of the loop or really badly bullied, but I never had a great time. Let's say it like that. And until I lost weight, which was I was 15, 16, where I was so stubborn and said, so, okay, I had enough of that. I didn't feel there's anything getting better. I want a girlfriend. I mean, like the typical stuff you have probably when you're a kid, and then I lost weight and that changed.
How did you do that? How did you go about it? Because I imagine you were probably 15, 16. And I mean, that's a whole science on the internet right now, how to lose weight.
I did basically what I do at the moment again with my 46, intermittent fasting. I did basically back then. So
did you just find that out intuitively?
Yeah. Or did you read about it? It was called back then FDH, like Friss die Hälfte.
eat half of it. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I eat half of it. So that's hilarious. Okay. So I ate in the morning, I ate at lunch, and I didn't eat anything in the evening. I ate sometimes a yogurt or something like that, nothing big. And did that for half a year and then growing, and then I lost 25 kilogram, and I was pretty thin then back then. So, and then that changed my perspective on a lot of things. So suddenly like the world was not so bleak anymore. I mean, it's like, because
was that about agency? Was it because, you know, you were like, okay, maybe I'll change something, and then you actually did?
Yeah, I changed something, and also the reception of me in from outside people changed. I mean, there was one example of a girl that I fancied before. I was still overweight, and then she said, "No, let's just be friends," because I was always in the friend zone, which is a typical thing. Because I mean, I was a nice person to talk to and stuff like that. But in the eye of a 15-year-old girl, was probably not attractive enough. And then after I lost weight, she wanted to go out with me. And finally, then I didn't want to do it. So I think, and it didn't help my personal development that happened, because it was a bit, to see how superficial people are. And how important that looks was at this age was something that really, really, I hate. I mean, I now was the, and basically I changed sides from being bullied at, I was becoming a little bit a bully. Not in a mean way that, again, it's like, it was nothing crazy. I'm not a bad person. Well,
that's usually something that happens when somebody who has no power or agency, which is kind of the same thing, goes to a place where he or she suddenly realized, okay, I can actually move this around and have this agency, that they then kind of calibrate, right? And that kind of means that you go a bit over the boundary in the other direction. And so it's a usual thing, no, that people who come from nothing maybe grow a bit mean at first. It's very hard to say, well, you know, I know how it is on the bad side. Let me, you know, be the kindest person right away. You kind of want to test and feel that newfound agency too, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And there's a there's some interesting developments there as well. It's like, and this is what I mean, it's like my early 20s were a little bit my lost years, where I was very self-focused, and I worried too much about myself, and I was very hedonistic. I mean, it was the 90s, don't get me wrong, and the 90s were, compared to now, a very peaceful time. There was not a lot of a lot of bad things around it, you know. That was before 9/11, that was before so many things that divide our society today. And so I thought back then, let's be a little bit more hedonistic, more self-focused. But looking back, it felt a little bit lost years when it comes to my personal development, because some stuff I even went back. I was really curious. I mean, when I was here at the Berlin party scene, I was really keen to be on guest list and And it's so funny because a lot of my time on Earth, I never cared about what other people think of me. Most of the time, don't get me wrong, that sometimes still happens. But it's like at this point in time, I care too much about these kind of things, which didn't bring me forward. And I think but it's all right. I think it was.
When did that change? I mean, so it sounds like you kind of partied a lot and maybe were looking for like this confirmation and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So you now you kind of say, okay, those are kind of lost years. They feel stagnant looking back. You had the wrong values. That's what it also sounds like. When did that change and what changed?
I mean, it was a gradual change. It was not one exact moment. I think the craziest hedonistic years were like from 21 to 24. So then I had my first longer girlfriend, and then that basically there where I finally finished my university. that happened basically in this time. And then when I went into work, and then also being faced with a lot of decisions and taking more agency, because when you're studying, I don't know how you experience it or other people out there experience it, but when I studied, it was still like in school, there was still like an end target and you're still going along with the ride a little bit.
Yeah, of course.
The moment you're switching and you're becoming again agency, you in control of your own life, you suddenly think much more about yourself, where you're going, what you want in life. But nevertheless, I mean, it took me still, I would say, first I became journalist, and that I did for quite some time. From 2006 to 2011, I was editor-in-chief for Eurogamer. And there was like, this was my point in time where I was stable, I would say. I had good friends, had a long relationship and everything. And I reached a certain height in my career with that role. But then again, came the point where I became a little bit restless. And I felt that's not the end. That's not the goal, you know.
I feel
and,
that.
And this is when I switched to the other side and switched to game development. And there I tried out a lot, a little bit like before. I became first PR, then I did biz dev and product management. I became a product owner, a product director. And then I decided to do my own thing. And now it's really funny. So basically, these changes in life come always in waves. I think that's the key component. There's like a lot of time stuff builds up, and then you build it, and then the pressure is up, and then you change something, and it's a lot of times it was a good change for me. I can tell you, and I think at the moment I never feel as much at home as I ever did before, because from my friends to my I have a wonderful wife. I do my dream job. I mean, this is literally what I ever dreamt of, and even better, because I never dreamt of that. I never thought that I achieved that. I never thought that I get there, and I got here, and I'm super happy to do this because I love every, I mean, there's not a lot of things I don't like about it. It's even contract work and taxes and everything. Everything is special, and especially now when I don't have to do everything by hand anymore and I can just have to know stuff or give feedback to. I think now I came to the point where I finally feel really like this is, I mean, let's see. I mean, I still have there's still an adventure of becoming a father out there, and there's still other adventures out there, I'm pretty sure. But when it comes to my career, I reached a point where I think this is already a great, I mean, this is exactly where I wanted to be. I mean, there's still probably sometimes a little nagging feeling. Yeah, you know, I started with medicine, so there's still sometimes the feeling, what would have been, would have, should have, could have. But it's not really strong. I really feel at home where I am at the moment.
I want to ask you about home and family too. You said in part one, and if you, dear listener, haven't listened to that, you can listen to that. In part one of this conversation, you kind of said in the end that that the way you build your company is really about building a home, building a family, building a group, building a safe place, all these things that one might associate with a big family. You kind of said you didn't have 100 people family that moves together and sticks together type of thing.
Yeah.
What do you think motivates you to build this home for yourself? Because yeah. that's what it really sounds like when I listen to you.
Yeah.
That you're looking for this belonging, this connection
yeah.
in your work. That and what do you think motivates you to build that like that?
I mean, like I said, I think the key component here is that I come from a family where there was love. I mean, I have a father which is very typical old school type, not showing the too much emotional style. But I mean, you can discuss now how much longing comes from that. I think that's one part, but it's like how my family was built. My sister was always older, so she left early. So it was always, while she's 10 years older, so I just had a few years with her. I never had the same connection to my bigger family than I had then later with friends. I mean, my friends, my co-founder, by the way, which is more now silent partner because he's not into games, but he was always a strong believer in myself. So Max and me, we were in school together. We shared everything. We were going to holidays together. We were like best friends, like in the best imaginable ways. And this is the point. It's like, and I think that's the point for me now is like, well, I still love my family and I'm great with everyone. I love my sister and my nephew and everyone. It's like, I never felt as much as home as I did with my friends. I think, and this is like building my home was always a bit, about finding my rights, the right tribe. Yeah. My group of people that are thinking like me, not thinking like me, that are passionate for the same things and they can't be different. I want to be clear. It's like, I have people that are complete opposite of me and we work pretty great. It's like I have a lead artist and he's sometimes annoyed by me being extroverted and whatever. But and I think it's a great, we are great in combination. It's like he has all that creativity, but he is a hard time to probably decide something sometimes and so on. And so I'm like something on the other side, a complete opposite. And I like that. I think that works. It works when you don't need everyone thinking the same, just wanting the same. I think wanting to make great games, I think is the key component that all brings us together. And I think personally to make that, to make great games, you have to provide security. People can focus on what is important. It's not about how they get their next paycheck and if their next month have still a job. But most importantly, they can make great games and they can focus on that. I think this is my clear. And I have to be honest.
I really want to repeat something you just said before you. Then you can feel free to continue. But it's not about everybody thinking the same. It's about everybody wanting the same.
Yeah.
I think that's very strong. I just want to repeat that. Yeah. Underline that.
Yeah, it's like this is for me. And this is it's like. And that's the same with agency, even internally. Yeah, we have a system now. I think it works. You can probably ask some of my employees; they all think the same. But it's like I don't wanna decide everything. I don't wanna micromanage at all. What I still provide is what happens a lot in the company is like we have because we are very democratic. I mean. We don't have a hardcore hierarchy and stuff like that. So there's a lot of times that there's pet situations. And like one opinion is this, one opinion is this. And so I'm most of the time, I'm the decision breaker. I'm the guy who then makes the decision. But I do that because I think personally that works for us and it works in a company. It's not an easy one. I mean that. I had a co-founder, another co-founder, we were co-CEOs and it didn't work at all. We just fought. We couldn't decide on stuff and it just didn't work. And at the moment it works really well. I think personally, I know it's always a question of perspective, but this is how we basically work is that I love when people do a great job. And the only thing some of my people, I just say great all the time. There's not a lot of decision or big things for me. It's like I have some people where I mean, and some other people need more
that's
help.
That's trust, right?
Yeah, that's trust. Some people I have 100% trust. And sure, we sometimes discuss a feature, but it's like I have to be honest, I would also enjoy just sitting there and seeing an awesome team producing kick-ass stuff. And I just basically just enjoying it. I would be fine with that as well. You know, just to be clear, it's like, I don't need to be micromanaging stuff. I don't need to go into, decide everything. If I, the moment, and this is the last thing I want to make clear is like, for me, my company is also a little bit like a puzzle. Yeah. Or big picture. Yeah. And the point is, at the beginning, there was a lot of holes in this puzzle. And so I had to fill them out, or other people had to fill out even spots they didn't like. And so now, and this is the cool bit about now growing the team and becoming a more mature company, is like, so finally there's less and less holes in there, and everyone can do what they are best at. And I think that's the key component. At the end, I want to have the full picture, and I just want to sit in front of there. And I think that's, for me, like one of the prettiest and coolest things in the world. It's like, I mean, I have the feeling like everything is in flow. Yeah. It's like we have exactly the right team for that. We have everything runs like it should be. And I think I would just enjoy this, just watching that. That sounds a bit silly.
I remember one time you said to me, in another conversation, I think you said something like, I think I'm a good CEO because I'm lazy.
Yeah. What I mean by lazy is, yeah. I don't want to, I honestly, it's like, I can do a lot of things, and I mean, I worked my ass off as a game journalist. I wrote like 1,000 articles or something like that. But if I don't have to write one article and just give feedback, I'm fine as well. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah. I had my co-founder, I just want to make that clear, he worked with me at Splash Damage. I think he was a fantastic, he was a tech artist, fantastic guy. But he never, I think he wasn't a good boss, because he was a technical artist. So he could do 3D, he can do some programming. And what happened a lot of times, if someone didn't do a great job, he just took it away from them and did it himself. And I think this is one of the deaths you can do for the company. It's really, really bad. It's like, you take away agency from the people, and that's what we do. Agency is a big thing, I think.
It's the topic. It's the topic.
And that's the point. It's like, if you take agency away from the people, they will never improve, they will never be better, and it will always feel wrong. And I think that's the good thing, is I don't feel, it's like, sometimes I think, yeah, probably if I would write that article, or if I would build that strike mission, yeah, I'm still one of the most hardcore gamers in the company, just to be clear. It's like, I mean, it's me. I when I'm coming the evening, I play a lot of multiplayer games, Destiny and World of Warcraft, whatever. And so some of my game designers are not as hardcore as me. So I think that, but it wouldn't help. If I basically do that, yeah, it wouldn't help. It wouldn't help them at all to get better if I do everything. That it makes no sense for me.
Well, I think that's an important lesson, that is, you can find it easily. Everybody says it, that, you know, to be a good leader, you need to give agency. Yeah. And it's great that you have it built in. I think it's very important. I can also really feel what you're saying when you're talking about the flow in the company. I just want to I feel that when you say that, when the puzzle goes to completion stage and you're like, yep, and then every piece fits right away. And yeah, that's really nice. I can feel the feeling through the conversation. So I think that's really beautiful. I wanted to ask you too, before we close somewhat soon, about games. What were like your defining games in your life? Normally, I think I asked that in the beginning, but I didn't now. So
cool. I mean, like we discussed it before, and Counter-Strike, I think, was one of my main, was my epiphany when it comes to online games. This is what drove me to become an e-sportler. It became me to become better. I think it also has had a good, it basically made clear what kind of type of player I am. I'm a typical killer achiever guy. So I like to basically be better than other people online games. Like in one of the online games audiences. And so Counter-Strike drove me, because I was also pretty good at it. I love the tactical aspect of it. I love the clan aspect, the teamwork again. Teamwork is always an important thing.
Were you an in-game leader when you played Counter-Strike as well?
Yeah, I mean, I was a clan leader, but in the fights itself, a lot of times other people shouted out. I did sometimes. It depended on what time in my career. At the beginning, I was not that great, and I was pretty good. And then I shouted out a lot of the commands and basically tactics and stuff. And then I moved out again. I mean, it's like a very natural con. Just to be clear, I was already very old when I started it. I was already 26 or so when I started it. So my reaction time was already not that great anymore. I had to basically mimic, like use more tactics and experience there. The next point was basically, I think that's one of the key components, and that what drove me a lot. And then there are some games which also, like Homeworld was a big definer from the whole storytelling, and I loved that. Warcraft 3 was also, I did also some online play there. So Warcraft 3 and everything what came after that, from the Dotas to the League of Legends, and then sure, World of Warcraft. I had my fair time with it. And nowadays, it's more something like Destiny. So it's like, a lot of times online games, I switched away from single player a lot. I still do them sometimes because I still like them. But I think online games is this competition stuff is important for me, but also working together against a bigger goal, elements like I discussed before with, that you, this co-op experiences, raids, these dungeon style experiences. This is the stuff that drives me. Working with other people. The only sad thing is that, it's hard for me sometimes to maintain that I had a big community of people I played with in my 30s, but that after a while that was not feasible anymore. So I play a lot of times also alone now, just online games alone. I play sometimes.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, sometimes with my colleagues or whatever. But that's the only downside. It's like, when I have time, and also I sometimes do it in the day in at lunchtime, I play a few games. So I think that is driving me. It's like that online game, team game. These are the, and then also like all the systems around it. And that's funny because coming from Counter-Strike, where there's no meta game, now I'm more and more into a meta game. So it means builds like in an Outriders, in a Destiny, what kind of builds you're playing? How do you min-maxing? These kind of things are driving me a lot. And sure, I play also mobile games, but this is more, mobile games are more for research. I'm honest to you. It's like more for research. And I like some games, don't get me wrong, like a Clash Royale or a lot of the new games, some idle games. And so that's all fine. But like the real passion comes. And this is also why, and I think that's the last one is important one there. It's like sooner or later, we probably will end up also to be more than a mobile first or even PC company. I could even imagine doing more. But this is a little bit still in the future. We are still working on becoming the premier mobile MMO company.
One step at a time, right?
One step at a time. You can't have everything at once.
Even though it's hard for the visionary types who can, you know, have all these curiosities and interests. I think you're one of those. Then you can kind of see the future and you're like, well, I want this and all at the same time. And well, that doesn't always work.
We have already a good plan for the future. We already good. Have a another title, we got a German Games Fund and built Mini Civilization, also strategy type experience on mobile first. And then our title after that, where we already do some pre-production and some adventuring there. That could be one of the first titles that go a little bit further. But yeah, it's a little bit early to talk about that kind of stuff, and it's not fully there yet. And we focus first on our main games. But yes, I have a longer plan, and that longer plan includes also finding that other platforms. Because this is, if you're looking, it's a big opportunity and a great opportunity for us, and it just basically enriches what I said before is like this teamwork, working together to become that.
Indeed, fantastic. We started with what you were doing and went into Homeworld in episode one, and now we're ending on Homeworld and what you are doing maybe in the future note. So that's a great time to close. Thank you so much for this fantastic chat, Christian.
Yeah.
Very inspiring, very relatable. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Can find you at Christian Metzger, not at, but like just Christian Metzger on LinkedIn. We discovered that in part one. And well, the last word is yours. What would you like to share before we go?
Yeah. Your auto, I mean, that's the biggest thing I really like about the future, is hopefully getting out of our bubble, getting back into people. I had that a really cool meeting with some guys from the MediumBot, and that was my final closing words there. It's like, that's the thing I look most forward to, is not just meeting all my friends and everyone, but also bursting your bubble. Your own little social bubble, which was great. It worked fine for me, in the last month. I think it was okay. I survived. I didn't feel that I was not in a horrible, corona slumber or whatever. It was all right. But what I want to say is, like, finally we can get out and can experience something else in our social bubble. And that's, I think that was drove me all the time. So for 1 year, this was fine. I mean, I survived. It's good. But I think now it's time that we have something else and we can experience new stuff and can finally go out again in the world.
Fantastic. I wish it for you and for everybody else who needs that. Christian Metzger, thank you so much and see you very soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you for listening to part 2 of this episode. If you haven't listened to part 1 yet, you could do that. And if you listened to both already, thank you so much. Please follow or subscribe to this podcast on whichever platform you may be listening on, so you can stay tuned for many more exciting games industry guests from Berlin and from all over Europe. So I see you very soon. Until then, take care, thank you, and bye-bye.
Hi there. Before you go, this is Florian, Project Manager for GamesNet Berlin Europe. If you want to stay connected to the network, find out more about upcoming events and links to other MediaNet initiatives, you can visit us at gamesnetberlin.eu and subscribe to our newsletter. Thank you so much for listening to our podcast, and until next time.